You walk into the locker room and you're like, oh my God, look at these guys.
Yeah, I know. I remember I first walked into the locker room. I bought in all my stuff from Alabama. I was like, man, there's no way I'm going home. And then Reggie White's like, whose little kid is this in our locker room? Everybody knows, you know, Reggie was a minister. So I said some stuff to a minister that I can't say on the air. But like I said, man, Jerome Brown, Reggie White, Clyde Simmons, Andre Waters, Eric Allen, Byron Evans.
Seth Joyner, too, right?
Seth Joyner. Yep. You know, that was just on the defensive side of the ball. And, you know, not obviously on the offensive ball, you had Keith Byers, Herschel Walker, Randall Cunningham, Fred Barnett. You know, you had some – but it was a defensive-minded team. You know, that team was built around defensive guys.
No choice, though, right, because of the coach?
We had no choice. You know, obviously we had Rich Kotite, who we really didn't call him our coach. Bud Carson was my defensive coordinator, you know, the inventor of the steel curtain. A lot of people don't know that. But Kotite, we just coached ourselves pretty much. You know, as far as Bud Carson, he was the driving force behind our defensive guys. And when you have that many all-star guys on a defensive unit, it was great to play up behind those guys, and it made me a better player.
We have a lot of people who are familiar in the market with Randall. Obviously, he's got the UNLV ties.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people listening right now who didn't even see Randall play. And I will always bring up Randall Cunningham.
Shame on him.
Yeah, I know. Go back and watch the highlights. I'll always bring up Randall Cunningham as the ultimate weapon at quarterback in the history of the NFL. Like, when that guy got on the edge, like, I know people love Michael Vick, and you know, you might see Kyler Murray do some of those things. But what Randall could do in that, man, can you imagine if they really had the run pass option, the read option with Randall?
It would have been ridiculous.
How do you defend it?
You don't.
Right?
You don't. And like I said, the stuff he did back then against the way we played the game made it even more that much spectacular, because it was a lot more physical. He played against some monster defensive guys. The Giants were really good. The Redskins had a really good defense. You know, everybody was pretty, but you know, headhunters back then, and stuff he used to do in practice, they're glorifying it now on TV. So I always tell guys, I say, man, you need to Google Randall Cunningham and just watch some of his clips, and you'll be like, wow, that dude was legit.
My memory failing me, is it correct? Was it Carl Banks who tried to hit him low?
Yeah.
And he basically just bounced up like Gumby.
And still completed the pass.
Yeah. Like, you can't tackle him.
And he was an All-American punter at UNLV. A lot of people don't know that as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think he had at least one. He punted a couple for the Eagles, didn't he?
Yeah.
I thought he had at least one, like 70-plus.
He had a record.
I believe it was 92 yards, if I'm not mistaken. He held the record on a quick kick.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was amazing.
You described that era nicely. The Eagles, I think, could have won a Super Bowl, but it was just a monstrous era.
Like I said, just going against the Giants every year.
We didn't even mention the Niners.
The Niners was always tough. We always beat the Niners, though. It was something about every time we beat the 49ers, they end up winning the Super Bowl. So, you know, we kind of hung that out. And then, you know, the Cowboys were good.
The Cowboys were the problem in the playoffs,
right? That whole division was just really just – it was brutal. You know, every week you had to bring your lunch, and there was no days off. Even the Cardinals were decent back then.
So I'm curious, because you talked a little bit about how physical it was, how brutal it was, a different kind of game. When you watch the game now, what do you see with the headhunting taken pretty much out of the game, so much focus on what's a legal hit, what's a defenseless receiver, and so on? How would you have fit into that game? What do you see?
I don't think I would have lasted. It's real tough for a defensive back these days to guard these guys. You see the size of these receivers now. They're like 6'4", 6'5". Can jump out the gym. They can run real fast.
And you can't touch them.
Mm-hmm. You know, and obviously you see what it is for the quarterback. Man, if you even just tap him on the knee, you know, you're going to get fined for that. So it'll be really tough for a guy that played the game like we played the game to play in this era. Obviously, they're doing it to clean it up, you know, with the head injuries and the concussions and all that. And I understand that, you know, and that's good for the game. But, you know, you get a lot of old school fans and people that likes the. It's a barbaric sport, mm-hmm. You know. It is what it is. You know, guys are getting stronger, bigger, faster, but it's still football, man. And people pay to see the big hits. You know, that's what people pay to see.
You look back on that era. Why did Randall not finish with the Eagles? Why didn't he just play until he's 35 or 36? Now we should bring
up,
and this is why I was mentioning the Jets point that next year. 92, your first year, you guys go 11-5. I think the next year you went 8-8. Mm-hmm. Randall only played four games.
Mm-hmm.
He actually got crunched in a Jets game and broke his leg.
Yeah,
and
I remember
it
that.
Seemed like for the next couple of years, you tell me, you were there. Was he right the next couple of years? Because he was so depressed. He said when it happened, he was like, I'm thinking about retirement. He was only like 30 years old.
Mm-hmm. It was a tough deal for him. You know, you figure he was compared to like Michael Jordan in that era. He was the guy. He was on all the talk shows. He was on Sports Illustrated. You know, he was the guy. And for him to go down like that was a big blow for us. You know, it crushed us. You know, because we, you know, when we first started off, man, we were running the table. We were beating everybody. We're like, man, we're finally going to get a chance to go to the Super Bowl. And then when he goes down, we're like, man. And then he goes through that little depression stage, and Kotai gets fired. We bring in Ray Rose, and Ray Rose, him didn't really get along.
Is that right?
They put Rodney Pete in, yep. And you know, that kind of rubbed him the wrong way. And you know, he was my guy from day one. He always looked out for me, and I think that's why I didn't go back to Philadelphia, because I always defended him. And you know, when Ray Rose put Rodney Pete in there, he wasn't a popular choice in the locker room, because we knew that Randall still had a lot to offer, and for all he did for the city. You know, it was kind of whacked the way they kind of, you know, phased him out.
What's that like in a locker room when you've got a guy who's a legend, everyone's behind? I mean, especially for Rodney Pete. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and defend him, but that must have sucked for Rodney Pete. Like, yeah, I'm getting a chance to play, but the rest of the team loves this guy, and now they're making this decision that's really controversial.
It was tough. I think it wasn't too many guys left from that era when I first came in.
Yeah.
I think it was Willie T, William Thomas, Byron Evans was kind of like the only two guys left on the defensive staff. But from year, you know, Seth Joyner started leaving, Clyde Simmons leaving, Reggie White went to Green Bay, things just started exploding. Just the locker room, I was still a Randall guy. And, you know, from that era, you know, you stick with your guys. And you know, I was a little biased toward Randall. I was like, man, Randall should be playing. You know, and, you know, Rodney was winning, and, we, you know, we had a good season. We had a good playoff run. But RC was still our guy.
When you look at that kind of team that you walked into, the defense that you had, Randall Cunningham being there, do you realize when you're in the moment how fragile it all is, how quickly it can all come apart? Or do you feel like it's just going to go on forever when you see that kind of talent around you?
You think it's going to go on forever, especially like walking into the defensive unit I had. It was like a dream come true, you know, for a guy like me to be able to come in and play behind Reggie White and Eric Allen on one side. And I got two killer safeties, Seth Joyner, you know, Wes Hopkins, and Andre Waters, God rest their soul, they both passed away. But those guys were trained killers. You know, it was Dirty Waters. Yeah, Dirty Waters. It was to a point that me and Eric didn't have to cover any inside routes because receivers were scared to go across
the
middle.
Wow, that's
so
unbelievable.
You know, that was just a little inside plug that, you know, a lot of people didn't know. It's like, man, why you guys never get beat on inside routes? Because they knew, and Andre Waters always said, man, either I'm going to sleep or you're going to sleep. And he meant it.
Mark McMillan here on Cofield and Company. We were just talking about – I want to get to the Cowboys-Eagles rivalry in a second. But we were just talking about, because this is near and dear to my heart, it actually makes me vomit, the fact that you played for Rich Kotite early on, and then Kotite actually got another job, and he was with the Jets, and he's like, the Jets have had a lot of bad coaches. Rich Kotite was like the worst, most uninspiring coach I've ever seen run a football team. And you said as a player – he was just like a weird guy because you just had this big divide between offense and defense. Like, did he even talk to you guys?
No. I don't really recall having a conversation with him.
He's a head coach.
And that's, like I said, that's a head coach. I think the only interaction we probably had was probably, you know, when we're coming off the field and he's like, great job, defense. But, you know, our defense, we just went over, we listened to Bud Carson, said we had to do, and get our Gatorade, and we do what we got to do. But as far as communication with a head coach, I didn't really have a relationship with him.
You know what's crazy? His last year, you guys went, I think it was 7-9.
Mm-hmm.
You started out 7-2, and somehow you lost the last seven games.
Yeah, we Byron Evans was our guy. He was our captain, and when he went down, Bill Romanowski ran into his knee, and from then on, we didn't win another game. He was the captain of our defense. A lot of people didn't know. Even when Reggie White and Jerome Brown was there, Byron Evans was the guy that called the signals. He was the guy that ran the 46 defense. And after he went down, because that was a matchup, it was 7-2. The Cleveland Browns were 7-2. It was like a huge game, and we're like, man, if we win this game, you know, we got a shot. And after that, man, we didn't win another game. We sucked.